It's the Beckler and Shauna podcast. Your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
It's Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm Beckler.
I'm Shauna.
This is the Beckler and Shauna Pisscast, potentially a longer one today because it's Tuesday and we do Career Day.
Yeah.
On Tuesdays. If there's someone who you would like to hear from, you're like, hey, I'd always wanted to know more about that job. Or I have a friend who has a very interesting job. You should talk to them.
Yep.
We're looking for guests. We've got a few interesting people still in the tank that we're hoping to talk to.
Totally.
But we're always looking for more, especially if you have a connection and can hook us up, because that's how the best ones come about.
Like absolutely.
Our inaugural episode with the fighter pilot was a friend of the show who was like, hey, I know this guy. I can set you up. I'm like, cool, because I wouldn't have known how to find one otherwise. So.
And even today's guests were set up from...
I think it was their kid. We have two guests on today, and they run a business that does hazardous materials cleaning.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
So if you're caught up on the podcast, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about, like, how do you clean up some of these, you know, these biohazardous scenes and stuff, you know? Well, these folks have all the answers. So that's coming up at the end of today's podcast, a good conversation with two hazardous materials cleaners. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about another thing you can't look cool doing. Shauna's experience in a hotel. She was wondering if she should complain or not about this. We'll talk about hanging banners in the rafters of an arena, getting engaged very quickly, a feud in the hip-hop world.
Ooh.
That and more after your out-of-context clip.
But the Pizza 73 deliveries did not stop.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
We were talking about the Masters yesterday, which happened on the weekend. I'm not a golf guy, so I didn't watch any of it other than what was on at the gym when I was there on the weekend.
Yeah.
But I got a kick out of this. When it was on at the gym, the spectators on the course watching the tournament, you know what they call those people? They call them patrons. They're not fans. They don't refer to the fans or the crowd. They're patrons.
I feel like I just discovered that this year, and I didn't realize that before. I don't know if somebody had commented on that, and I was like, that is crazy.
You call them patrons of the sport.
Okay. Yeah, that's odd. Why?
Patron sounds they're funding it. And I guess maybe they kind of are indirectly, but...
Yeah, that's a very insincere way of saying it, hey?
I'm a golf patron.
Mm.
It's so uppity.
I don't like that.
It couldn't be more uppity if they tried.
No. Imagine us referring to you are our patrons, our radio patrons.
Patron of the show.
You are a patron of the show.
My brother, he's a painter, and he said in the art world, sometimes an artist will have like a wealthy benefactor that kind of funds their career, and they call that person a patron. So if an artist has a patron, and I guess that's probably where like more generally patron of the arts comes from.
Right.
But
don't like that one. Too uppity.
Golf patron.
I'm a patron.
Reminds me of how soccer fans, like in Europe, they don't call them fans. They're supporters.
Right.
I'm a Liverpool supporter.
At least I prefer that. Like, I don't want to call myself a patron. No, I wouldn't be like, I'm a golf patron. That just sounds like what you say to somebody to look down upon them, right? I don't like that.
Supporter, I don't really like either, though. It sounds like it's kind of like inserting yourself into the... It's like... We all did this. If you win, we all won together. It's, I don't really know. I just watched. But
I mean, if you purchase a kit, then you're a supporter in that way, right?
Scarf and a kit, you're a supporter.
You're a supporter.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I don't know if you've seen this, Beckler, but there is a rap battle feud happening right now between your favorite artist ever, Drake, and Rick Ross.
Yeah, I didn't look into it, but I did see something mentioned about this online. I don't know who did what, but I'm on Rick Ross's side. Because Drake is the absolute worst.
You're not a fan of Drake.
No. I agree with Rick.
And I'm not up on my rap feuds, I have to be honest with you. But I guess this has been going back and forth for just a little bit here. And lately, the most recent diss that Rick Ross did for Drake or said within one of his tracks was something that I found a little bit strange. He just listen to this actually. I can play very little of the song, obviously.
I imagine,
So here's just a very short clip, but it says in it.
You had an operation to make your nose smaller than your father knows.
So you had an operation to make your nose smaller?
Yes.
Is that what he said?
He said that. So this is the type of disses we're going after, right? We're calling each other out for having nose surgery. Is this. That's what's happening.
That's pretty funny.
That is the It's strange. Like, this just seems like a strange thing to do with your disses. We're going for nose surgery.
Look at that guy. He had a rhinoplasty.
Yeah, you got a rhinoplasty, okay? That's what he's saying about Drake.
It's an aftermarket schnoz.
Maybe Drake is a little sensitive about his nose, though. Maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe this is why he's saying this, but I was like, that's a strange thing to diss about his
nose. Maybe he had a deviated septum, which is medically necessary to have that nose surgery.
I suppose so. Although I guess that is, you know, that is kind of an insult, right? Like, excuse me, this is natural. Like, back when you got calf implants, it's like, you know, saying, no. You're like, no.
No.
I sure did not.
Oh, this is my real nose. Mm.
Drake since then has said, no, I did not get nose surgery, by the way. He's tried to clarify, but it's too late now. It is in song, okay? So...
Unless Drake releases a song that's like, this is my real nose. And then I'd be like...
Well, this is what I'm wondering. Like, is that going to be back? Because they tend to go back and forth, right? So it's like, is that the next one? No, actually, this is real.
Rick doesn't nose what he's talking about. This is my real nose.
No. What? Nose. Real nose.
Why am I defending Drake? He had nose surgery.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
So one friend of the show messaged, and I mean, I kind of gathered this from the line, but they said it. The diss is that Drake is trying to look less black.
Right.
He doesn't want a black nose.
And I knew that as well, but I just found it still a funny way to go about it.
Yeah, I also didn't want to, like, comment on that part of it.
No. You know,
that's not for me to say.
Yeah, it's not my space for...
Two black men dissing each other over that. I'll be over here.
Yeah, so, totally.
We need to have a feud with someone, Shauna.
I know.
Like, we're not taking enough advantage of the feud as a publicity tool.
No, I agree.
Who should we feud with?
Damn question.
I mean, it'd be too easy to feud with another radio station. I don't know if anyone would care.
No.
Who else could we feud with? I mean, you could feud with a politician, but then you're going to be accused of being partisan.
That's absolutely, yeah, that's the issue with that.
That doesn't help us. Who could we feud with?
Too bad, like, retired Nenshi, you know, when he was no longer mayor, and then now that he's back, we can't. But, like, that would have been a funny guy to feud with.
When he wasn't active?
When he wasn't active in politics.
Still might have been accused of being partisan,
right,
if we feuded with him.
But
who could we feud
with? Good guy to feud with. Could we feud with, like, Pete the Plumber?
I wouldn't say I had a feud with him.
I don't have a feud with any of these people. I just was like, it would be fun to, but you're right. Like, I mean, I don't have a legitimate... I think Pete the Plumber's great, but...
Many years ago, if you went back on our podcast, there was a few times where we had a guest on named Mike Morrison, Bloggity.
Yes.
And... You know, we had him on. He was very prominent in the gay community in Calgary.
Yeah.
We had him on a few times to speak to things that were happening in the news involving the LGBTQ community. And I think he's since moved away. He's moved away from Calgary. But before he left, he and I got into it on Twitter one time.
Oh, right.
And, like, blocked each other and had a bit of a feud,
yeah,
I guess.
Go.
Like, it wasn't, like, ongoing. Like,
no.
We were just like, okay, well,
that was that.
Enough of you and enough of you. So,
yeah.
We're just kind of done with each other. But I wouldn't call it a feud.
No.
It wasn't like we kept going back and forth at each other. We should have. It would have been better for business. So
I'm going to have to think about people who I, like, truly want to feud with. I can't think off the top of my head at the moment.
I mean, neighborhood feuds are a big thing, feuding with your neighbors. The nice thing about a Shane Holmes paired home is that feud, if you live in a paired home, isn't going to be over noise. Unless it's noise in the yard. If it's noise within the house.
Yeah. You won't hear it.
Your neighbors won't hear it.
No.
You'd have to go outside to fight, to even yell at your neighbor that you were feuding with. You can learn more about Shane Holmes paired homes and their next level soundproofing, the yell test that they allow you to do in their homes. You test it out for yourself.
Yep.
You will not hear what's going on the other side of that wall. Learn more at ShaneHolmes.com. Shane Holmes.
The better way to build.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
A friend of mine met a guy 6 weeks ago and they're now engaged and going to be married.
Whew.
They said in the next couple of months.
That's quick.
Yeah. So they phoned me and they were very excited and I was very excited for them. And I mentioned this to another friend and the person's like, yeah, that's pretty fast, isn't it?
6 weeks?
6 weeks. And at first I was like, yeah, I agree. That seems a little quick, doesn't it? And then I got thinking about it and I was like, you know what? The divorce rate is nearly 50% anyway. Is that much better or worse? In fact, I know quite a few people who did the whole shotgun wedding thing after barely knowing somebody and they are still happily married 20 years later. So
yeah, I think it could happen.
Yeah.
My question is, I don't know why you would.
I see what you're saying.
Unless you're like super religious, not allowed to touch each other or anything, you know, like
yep.
until you're
They're
married
not that.
or one of you is terminally ill and you want to get married before you die.
Yep.
The Walk to Remember style.
I was about to say.
I don't know why you would. Like, yeah. You don't have to, right? You could take a year and date each other and see if you're still feeling the same about it before you rush off and get married. That would, I mean, if a friend came to me and said, I'm thinking about proposing after 6 weeks, I'd be like, you sure you don't want to wait? Like,
yeah.
You don't have to.
It's true.
You don't have to get married.
To be fair, they are a little bit older.
Okay.
And they want kids.
Okay, so the clock is ticking.
And the one guy did say, he was like, I don't want to have a kid out of wedlock.
Okay. Okay. So, perhaps, there's some extenuating circumstances here.
Still, I mean, in that case, it's even a little more alarming as I'm thinking this through, because then I'm like, okay, you're then jumping into kids before you know each other all that well. So maybe that's even more concerning in my brain.
I mean, there are lots of people. I've heard those stories too. You know, we knew right away.
Yeah.
It's like when you know type thing. But have you ever had a friend, Shauna, a new friend that you started hanging out with, and then you see a side of them?
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, maybe I was wrong about this person.
Yeah.
What if that was your spouse?
I know. I mean, they haven't spent any moments apart. It was one of those, like, they had one date, and then I guess the second date is basically, they're living in, like, together immediately. Like, it was just, she said she just knew, and.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm very excited for them. I'm like, you know what? It could go really well or could not. But really, when it comes down to marriage, it's that way anyway. So
all marriages can go one way or the other,
I suppose.
That is a good point.
Yeah, I'm very excited. They sound very excited, though.
That gives me anxiety. I mean, I take longer than that to buy tires, you know, to price out and do my research on tires.
I
couldn't imagine picking a wife in under that time.
I know, it's true. So, it's like, sometimes I take that long to poop, really. Like,
the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
A radio friend pointed something out yesterday that I hadn't realized, and it's a little bit embarrassing. I, as you know, I'm a Blue Jays fan.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Jays have a banner hanging beside their World Series banners for making the wild card.
For making the wild card.
For the wild, yeah, for making the, not winning the wild
card. Like making it into the wild card and played it. Oh. That's banner worthy,
just,
eh?
Oh my lordy be.
Man.
Like, I know, okay? It's been a bit of a stretch since they've won the World Series. But making, that is embarrassing. Come on.
What is the deepest the Jays have made it, like, since the World Series win?
Like, I don't even want to know. I don't
want. Was it the Division Series? Was that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then making the, like, the wild card isn't even, I mean, I know it's technically the playoff, but I don't consider it
the postseason.
Technically,
no.
The playoff.
It's, you know, to get into the postseason. Yeah. The postseason starts with
the last two races they lost the wild card race, and they have a banner that says, "My Lord, I can't."
What do you think is banner worthy then? Do you think, like, I think in the NHL, I think like making it to the Stanley Cup final, winning the conference is banner worthy. It's very difficult to do these days.
You're right.
You know, there's 32 teams in the NHL. To make it all the way to the Cup is not easy.
But do you need a banner for that, though? Like, you know that you made it that far. Maybe not a banner, but something else. Like, I think the banner should maybe just be for
championships.
If you win the championships, but maybe something else for if you make it that far. I mean, you know, do you have to display a banner?
But then if you're like Vancouver...
I know.
She's looking awfully empty up in the rafters there. It's just the flag. That's it.
I mean, and it does give you, I guess, something to maybe be proud of or to cheer for. Like, maybe the Oilers should do that for each time they win the draft pick, right?
Yes.
Right? Just hang a banner for each time. It's like, we've done crappy enough that we get a new draft. Guys, it's draft pick.
Look. In Edmonton, they have a banner hanging in that arena for 9 sold-out Garth Brooks shows. Do you remember how hard we ripped on that when they hung that banner?
That.
9 sold out shows, and then Garth Brooks
Holy
is like stylized
man.
Lowercase g.
That's embarrassing.
Like, that's hilarious. And then we made our own, like, all our own banners of what they should hang in Edmonton.
Yeah.
But what about like a record setting season? Do you think if you, like, so for example, last year my Boston Bruins set a regular season record, then got beat out in the first round. Do you hang a banner for a record-setting season?
I mean, this is the thing, is you start doing that, you're going to get all muddied here. Like, there's going to be just banners for all kinds of stuff. And if you're one of those analysts, right, you know that they can find something that you did good that season, no matter how bad it is. That's your job. So you could have really particular stats.
If you
know
really
what I mean?
If you really wanted to get down to it. I don't see how it gets much worse than 9 sold-out Garth Brooks shows. being banner worthy. But
I just take that up. Like, guys, we're not good at hockey, but the 50-50, the record of 50-50s, that is something
biggest
that
50-50 ever.
That is what Edmonton should celebrate.
Banner it.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
It's not Friday when we usually do the Friday morning peach chat for Atlas Pizza.
No.
But a few people, a few friends of the show, including Matthew and then Victoria from our team here at the station, they sent me this story from Edmonton regarding pizza, which they thought deserves our attention. I'm going to play a bit of this news clip for you here. Okay.
Many people love a hot, cheesy pizza delivered right to their door. But Justin Rybicki's love of the big pizza pie is being spoiled by a prankster.
So every time I see pizza, I'm doing commercials. It gives me nightmares.
In November, Rybicki was eating dinner at home when he heard a knock on the door. It was a Pizza 73 delivery driver with nearly $100 worth of pizza. The delivery was under his name and number.
So I checked my emails and it had an order that I never ordered. So then we told him that it wasn't me that ordered the pizzas.
Concerned that he may have been hacked in some way, he filed a police report, but the Pizza 73 deliveries did not stop.
So it goes on like this for a while, and eventually thousands of dollars of pizza have showed up at this guy's home and work. And he called Pizza 73's head office, told him to stop delivering, so that whoever's pulling this prank switched to Domino's. So now he's getting Domino's pizzas. Yeah, which, I mean... Sucks for the driver, especially, right? Yep. Sucks for who's out the money, the pizza restaurant's out the money.
That's an awful waste of pizza.
Like, sure, if it's a terrible waste of pizza.
Eat all that pizza, then what do you do with it? That's just a waste of pizza.
I hope it goes to a good place.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
So he has no idea who might be doing this to him.
No.
I have a theory.
Okay.
What if it's a ghost pizza?
Oh, God.
What if it's a ghost pizza? I had a ghost pizza experience once. Did I tell you this story?
Yeah, you did.
About 6 months ago, like I ordered a pizza.
100 times.
And from the moment I pressed enter online to the moment the doorbell rang was like 3.5 minutes. Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted. And I asked the driver how he got there so fast. And he said, not busy, not busy. But I know that I lived like three minutes away from the pizza place. At least that's if you get green lights all the way. I also know at this particular pizza joint, it took eight minutes to put a pie through the oven. So how did this happen? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that somebody else ordered the same pizza I did and it was just delivered at the same time.
I'm only letting you do this because I'm like, it's been long enough that there's probably people listening who haven't heard the story before.
You've heard this one?
I've heard it like 3,000 times. I'm not even exaggerating. At this point, we've been a show for how long?
Almost 10 years.
Yeah, I've probably heard it
but
about
this only happened 6 months ago.
No, so. It didn't. It definitely happened like 7 years ago.
How does a pizza get to my house that fast?
Oh, God.
You know, I even thought about calling back to the pizza restaurant to ask how they were able to deliver it so quickly, but I was afraid that they would say, whatever what do you mean? That driver died 10 years ago this very night. Jeez.
Wow. It's like I've heard this before or something.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I stayed at a hotel this weekend, and one of my friends was staying on the pullout couch. And the morning we left, we were just about to check out, and he found a ton of mouse poop in the pullout bed.
No!
Yeah.
Yikes, that's nasty.
So, we'd already paid in full at this point. And of course, my friends were like, we should definitely say something about that just for, and I was like, absolutely. And really just for the next people being like, by the way, I don't know if you know, there is mouse poop all over. And of course, if it's in the bed, you know, it's all over the unit and it had a full kitchen and stuff. And it's like, oh, it's probably on the plates and everything.
This was at a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't yet reached out. Part of the reason is I noticed that hotels don't really do much if you do have something like this that happens. And I've stayed in quite a few hotels. There's been a few things. Like, we stayed at this really expensive place, and it was like $500 or $600 a night. And the thermostat was stuck at 30 degrees.
The whole time?
The whole time. And so we tried to, like, give them the heads up and be like, and we didn't sleep a wink because of it. And there was no windows to open. And so we just wanted to give, again, the heads up of the future people being like, you might want to try and figure out why that thermostat is, like, why it was so hot in there.
I would say that in that instance, the room should be comped and they shouldn't be renting that room out to anybody.
I know. And it wasn't.
Especially like a high-end hotel like that. Like, you can't charge someone $500 to sleep in a room where the thermostat is broken.
I know.
You got to close that room until it's fixed.
Totally. And it, like, we would never have spent that much money normally. It was a friend's wedding. It was kind of the only option at the time. And it was like, okay. And then that happened. I was like, ah. And they didn't do anything. And it's like, what do you do? Right? You can only complain. And then... I mean, if they don't do anything,
you can write a letter. If you write a letter to management, and if it's, I mean, if it's worded in a way that makes it seem like you're not just a complainer about everything.
And that's the issue. And the thing with the mouse poop, I'm not expecting to get anything back for it because unfortunately we didn't take a photo. So that's the problem, right? And I was like, I think the problem is with these hotels, and the reason that they won't do anything is because there's probably a lot of people who try and take advantage of the system. And maybe come up with reasons that are not true.
I still think that they would jump to it in that instance. So? Oh, yeah. If you found mouse poop in your hotel bed, like, I think any hotel worth its salt is going to try to make that right for you. Because if they don't, your next stop is TripAdvisor or Booking.com. And you leave your review there, your Yelp review, and says, hey, we found mouse crap in the bed. And that is terrible for business.
I suppose so.
Terrible. But
again, even with those reviews these days, like, do people take them seriously anymore? I feel like there's a lot of fake reviews or deleted ones or whatever as well. So
it all depends on how it's written.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of your letter too. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
I very rarely complain to a business. Like, things have to be pretty bad before I'll say something.
I'm honestly thinking of not. And it was mouse poop. And my friend's like, you probably should because of that, because I don't like to complain.
And
like,
I always try to write at least like two letters of commendment.
Yes.
Like, two good reviews for every bad one that I write.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I feel like I've kind of earned the right to complain here. But I think both of the things you described, I think, are complaint worthy.
Yeah.
A 30 degree room and mouse poop in your bed. Yeah, that's not just you being a whiner. That's like,
it's cuddly though. Cute little mouse.
You can't charge for that.
Where's mouse at?
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I've got another thing you can't look cool doing, if I could, Beckler.
Okay.
This one may be a little controversial, so I'm curious how you feel about this, okay? Bad karaoke. If you're really out of tune or you don't really know the song and you go up there, I'm sorry, but it goes badly fast. You know, like, you can't look cool up there when you're flailing. You just can't. And I know that this is kind of the mission of karaoke,
yeah,
is that you're supposed to go up there and have a good time. And there's a way of doing it where you're not that you're an accomplished singer. You don't have to be that. But if you really just don't know the song at all when you go up there and you start flailing, you just can't look cool doing it.
Yeah, I'll half agree with you.
Okay.
There are some situations you can get yourself in karaoke where you don't look cool.
Yeah.
I've been on the receiving end of one of those. I think the first time I ever did karaoke, I just picked a song I liked and got up there and realized it wasn't in my range.
Yeah.
And I was like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
this is going to be a long 4 minutes.
These are the things that happen. And I have seen people up there who are incredibly tone deaf. And it's just like, oh, like, because there's ways, again, if you can't sing, where you can kind of just still do it. But people don't realize this, I don't think, at first, is that you kind of have to have a little bit of practice. And when you go to those karaoke places, you realize that the majority of the people who go up there have at least tried that song before, or at least are prepared to do that song.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't enjoy it as much, because when you notice that, you're like, there seems to be the majority of people here who, even though they pretend, oh, I'm just doing this on a whim, actually have it kind of zoned in.
Is that the uncool thing? To go up there and take yourself too seriously at karaoke? Because fun karaoke is about not taking yourself seriously. It's like, hey, none of us are pros.
Fair.
We just like the song. We're going to go up and have a good time. If you're the person that's like you described,
mm-hmm,
oh, who, me? This song? And then you just nail it.
Like, maybe this is just it. Is there's an argument for all kinds of things that go on in karaoke places that I'm just not a big fan of. And you're right. The too seriously is one thing. The people who are far too drunk and like really aren't even trying, because you go up there and then you just flail for 3 minutes straight and everybody has to watch it as you don't even know the song. People, mm-hmm, I've seen people like stop singing, and then other times they don't know the words or how to sing the words to what's coming across the screen. And I'm like, okay. And then there's group karaoke. When a bunch of drunk people go up on stage and try and sing all together, and
sing
that
Sweet Caroline or whatever,
there's no way
for you
of doing that cool either. I don't think. Yeah,
I don't know, because again, I think it's about like not taking yourself seriously.
That's
it's about
what
having
I
fun.
Wish it was more about, but maybe I'm going to places that are too serious. With
it
their
sounds
karaoke
like
then.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to these like semi-pro karaoke nights where
maybe, or just on the night that. Because the last few times I've gone haven't been like the super busy night, so maybe it's just the nights where all the pros show up or the really, really drunk people. I don't know.
What is it, league night in here? I'm just having some drinks and like this song.
I need to.
I'm not a singer.
Terrifying.
None of us are. Isn't that why we're here?
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Beckler and Shauna's career day.
So sometimes, unfortunately, people will have the type of mess on their hands that they can't clean up, either because it's too big or potentially too dangerous, and you need to call in the pros. Like our career day guests today, Dean and Jeanette May run Maycan Hazmat Solutions. How do you describe what you do for work?
So we do hazardous cleaning and remediation services. It's for three categories: properties, vehicles, and the environment.
Why don't we start right at the beginning? How did you fall into this line of work?
Well, I'm a career hazmat technician. You know, when I got, tired of working for everybody else, Jeanette and I, she had a company doing home services, bookkeeping, renting out office trailers in the oil field. And then I quit my full-time job and we threw caution to the wind and started up our own Maycan Solutions.
So do you guys both clean then?
I mostly am in the office, but I do go out to jobs. Like tomorrow I'm doing a job. Mostly when I get involved is when I'm dealing with the hoarder directly themselves, and they need maybe some more help with sorting and cleaning and stuff, rather than get the crew getting in there and just cleaning everything out.
And from what I gather, do you deal with a lot of hoarders? Like, it seems like that's a fairly common thing.
Yeah, absolutely it is. We get a lot of calls for that, and especially after COVID, I found a lot of people just got into a depression state, and now they just need help getting that boost to clean up, and then they're on their own, you know, for some. A lot of other times we get calls on family. They went to visit their loved one, and or maybe they're in the hospital or they passed away, and then the family is shocked of how this person lived.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, you sent me a video of one you guys did just recently, Jeanette. It looked like it was maybe in an apartment.
Yes, it was.
And you couldn't even, you couldn't see the floor. It looked like there was maybe a foot of garbage through the whole place. And the before and after photos that you sent were unbelievable.
I know. We never even really had much time to clean that one, but it was just to remove the garbage so home care could come in and help her out.
When you deal with a hoarder like that, do you deal with a lot of like dead animals and stuff that's mixed in there too? Or
unfortunately, yes. We found them all. We found dead rodents, dead cats, dead dogs.
Oh.
I even went into one job site and found a dead person.
No way.
Oh, no. So,
They didn't know was in there?
It was a property that had a fire in it, so it was shut down and locked down and boarded up, and street transients would break into it knowing that, you know, what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was also a drug house, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when I went inside to do a drug neutralization in there, I found this person that had passed away.
How do you deal with that, Dean? Like, do you go into a job just preparing yourself that you might see anything?
After that, I can pretty much say I've seen it all.
Wow.
Do you find that work can affect you or still affect you? Like, did it ever really affect you seeing what you've seen in doing some of these cleanups? Or have you just managed to be able to psychologically be okay with it?
I would say the only part that really bothers me is where there's animals involved in a hoarder or a gross filth, because the people choose to live that way one way or the other, whether it's a medical condition or, you know, lack of motivation. But to me, it's the animal that I feel the worst for, because I'm a big animal lover to begin with, and the poor animal doesn't get to make that choice. That's a circumstance that the animal is thrown into. So that's the one that I feel the worst for.
Yeah, they're sort of a prisoner in that situation.
Absolutely.
Hey?
They don't have a choice.
And, you know, as far as the people go, I'm non-judgmental on that. It's just a job that's just a project that needs to be dealt with. I mean, it's great that, we can go in there at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning and take our beginning photos. And by the end of the day, when we walk away and take some final photos, the transformation is phenomenal.
Is that the most rewarding part of the job for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the what we get to see, the transition over the course of a day or two or three days, depending how big the project is, and then how grateful some of the people are. I had a lady just the other day say that her father was hospitalized. She hadn't been in the house in a decade and a half. And she said, when he comes home, he's literally going to be in tears. Hmm.
Well, I know, you know, like, people have stuff coming up in their lives and, you know, it can get out of control. And you give people their lives back in that sense, don't you?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, right? You know, there's some properties we walk into that the debris and, let's see, the collection, let's call it, is so deep that when you walk through a doorway, you have to duck.
Wow.
Wow.
There's been times when piles have been so high that we actually take a camera and climb as high as we can and take a picture to see what's behind it.
Jeez.
And where we have to take the door off the hinges in order to get a starting point.
Because you can't open it?
Yeah, that's correct.
You mentioned drugs just a moment ago, and I think that's something that many people don't consider. I learned about this just recently from a guy who'd had his truck stolen, and he didn't get it back for a few months. And I said, well, why not? Like, if the police had it, why couldn't they give it back? And they said, because the person who'd stolen it had a history with fentanyl, and they have to make sure that it is completely clean before they give it back. So is that something that you guys deal with?
Yeah, we actually specialize in drug, both properties, labs, user sites, and vehicles. So yeah, just like you were saying, a vehicle gets stolen and goes to a body shop for, you know, whether it's physical or mechanical repairs. Because it's theft recovery, a lot of the high-end body shops, they'll give us a call. Me or one of my other technicians will go right to the body shop and we'll drug test the vehicle. And we get results to tell us that it had cocaine, meth, fentanyl, you know, whatever it is. Then if it tests positive, they tow it over to our facility. And we've got what we call a decon booth. So we pull it in and remove all the contents out of the vehicles. And then it goes forward into our detail area where our team of technicians go through that vehicle, remove seats and whatnot, and give it a detail like you've never seen before.
Well, yeah, because even the smallest amount of something like fentanyl could kill someone if it was dislodged, hey?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. Wow. If it just goes to a regular detail shop and gets released, you know, little Johnny, little Mary do the drive-through at McDonald's and they drop a couple French fries or a piece of gum or something down between the seat and console and they retrieve it and stick that in their mouth. My goodness, I don't want to be responsible for that, right? Mm.
This might be a dumb question, but when you're dealing with those substances, are you in full hazmat gear?
When we're in the labs, absolutely. Even the user sites or the vehicles, yeah, we're in full hazmat.
I find that there's a lot of, you know, movies and TV shows and stuff now that have cleaners, and it almost seems to be a more popular thing in the media than it used to be. Is there anything that people get really right, or is there any shows that, you know, show the correct ways that cleaners do, or is there things that are, what's the, like, biggest misconception?
A lot of times I find these hoarder shows, they're not properly dressed in PPE. And that's the only thing, when we go into a property, we're fully protected. You don't know if there's diseases, viruses, the bio, you know, what that all holds. So you got to go in protected for sure.
Yeah.
And even for potential for mold spores or so, yeah, we've got the full white suits on, the N95 masks. And, you know, for us, that's putting the suit on and going to work for the day.
Do you do crime scenes?
Yes. Crime scene cleanups, traumas, we deal with those as well.
I imagine you've seen some grisly stuff through that.
Yeah, we've seen a few. You know, we get a lot of auntie, dad, grandma slipped and fell, and, you know, there's some blood trauma. And, but then we've had the other ones, too, where there's been a stabbing, a fight, a shooting inside of a property that needs to be cleaned up.
Suicide.
Yeah.
Yep.
So when you clean up a scene like that, what happens with all of your cleaning supplies then? Like, how do you dispose of that?
Everything gets bagged up and it goes to a licensed class 2 disposal facility.
When you dealing with that kind of stuff too, I feel like it would be emotionally draining. What do you do outside of work to cleanse your mind? Is there anything that you do to help with that?
It doesn't really affect me that much. Being a hazmat technician, the way I look at it is whether it's a liter of milk, a liter of gas, whatever chemical, or a liter of blood, as long as we're protected, we can not take it home and leave it on the job site, right?
Yeah. The first time I ever cleaned up, I was helping Dean with the crime scene, and that was my first time going on site. So we're cleaning it up, and the phone rang, and this is years ago, and her answer machine kicked in, and it was her voice, and I thought, oh, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But that was okay. It's, you know, you just kind of wonder. I wonder in my mind, you know, what happened? Why, you know, what state was she in? And, but that's about it.
Do you ever find more information, or do you not when it comes to, like, no.
We don't know anything. We don't know why or what happened, or, you know, sometimes it could be on the news, so you might hear something on the news, right?
Or a family member may share that, you know, this happened or that happened. But, you know, it is interesting to I guess maybe not just in a trauma house, but in any of the properties we deal with in general, it's kind of interesting when you go in through somebody's personal zone and, you know, look at the pictures that are on the wall and stuck to the fridge and kind of get a little bit of to see who that person was, right?
Yeah.
I know you describe it, Dean, as sort of like a job that needs to be done, and you have a detached approach to it in that sense, but it is very intimate what you're going through, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, we go through people's properties and we find their intimate secrets hidden in the darkest places.
Oh yeah.
Well, you guys are a couple that do this, which I also find really interesting. Like, doing that as a couple must be, is it a good thing? Is it, how do you feel about this?
Well, we have our days now. I find that we try to keep everything separate, right? So he mostly goes in the field. I'm more the project coordinator and working in the office. And then when we go out on the job site, you know, sometimes I'm lead, sometimes he's lead, but it depends, you know, again, if I'm working with the customer, that's the only time I go.
Right.
Okay. Or if he needs my help. So, yeah, we just try to separate our duties. Like, he does the back end, you know, the shop, the vehicles, and, you know, and just do our different things. But, yeah, sometimes, you know, you take it home and...
I was going to say, do you have any rules against talking about work when you get home?
That's the only time we can really sit down and talk.
Right. Yes.
When we get home. So, and, yeah, we try not to, you know, we set times, I guess, because when we're late at night or on a Friday night or something, let's not talk business, right?
Looking to the future, am I right to assume that your business is quite recession-proof? Like, there are always going to be messes.
For sure. I think so. Because we're service oriented, right? So, and everybody's always going to need drug cleanup or trauma or hoarding cleanup. Mm-hmm. And so I think through COVID, we were busy doing sanitizing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What advice do you have for people looking to maybe get into this?
A strong will.
Strong will?
Yeah, a strong will and a strong stomach. I ask, you know, all of our new staff when we first go to some of these job sites, like, just reconfirm with them, like, are you okay with this? And then as the project's going forward, are you doing all right? We've had a few people over the years that have said, yeah, no, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, we keep them away from it if they can't deal with it. When it comes to trauma cleaning, a large portion of the time, me personally, I deal with the immediate cleanup of the trauma.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep our employees in the background, you know, pass me this, or maybe can you get some of that, or, you know, that type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'm the one that's got my hands on it and dealing with it immediately.
Where can we find out more about Macan Hazmat Solutions?
Macan.com is our website, and we are based in Calgary and southern Alberta. We've actually done all of Alberta and some BC, some Saskatchewan, but mostly we concentrate on central to southern Alberta. Macan.com. But I just want to say, too, is Macan, Dean's name, last name is May, mine was Kendall, and we just put our names together. So Macan Hazmat Solutions. Macan your homes cleaner and safer, making your vehicle cleaner and safer, and the environment cleaner and safer.
Dean and Jeanette May, well, we really appreciate you talking to us today. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's Alternative, X92.9. Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have Beckler and Shauna downloaded daily to whatever device you use. Later.